Accession number 18683, Reel 2.
Len Capel, Reel 2. How did the Japanese behave towards you?
Oh, very good. You know, they used to say to us, the young lads, fellas at our age, that they'd go and sort them out for us. And I do believe, I'm not certain, I wouldn't quote it, that the Yanks did have some of them dressed up in our uniform, you know, American uniforms, Japanese troops. But I wouldn't, it was only airsick, I think, because you couldn't tell a Korean from a Japanese lookalike. They couldn't have been Japanese there.
So, did you volunteer to stay on in Korea?
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
I didn't fancy going back to Hong Kong to do all the drills and everything. It was in the Ulster Rifles, it's a very fast pace. Everything's double quick. You know, and I'd never done it. I'd always been in the Irish Fusiliers, and I didn't fancy going back to Hong Kong to do that. So I thought, I'll stay with the Norfolks. And the Norfolks asked so many of us to stay with them, to show them the ropes. And, you know, because at the time I was in charge of booby traps and mines. And the Chinese had just started using wooden mines, rushing, where the detectives wouldn't pick them up. We had a lovely device to find them. And I just felt comfortable staying there with them. Do a good, pretty good bunch, a bit raw. But soon come round, you know. Because one time we were on the hill and we see these Chinese digging a trench. So I started firing at them with my rifle. And one of the Norfolk officers come up, oh, he's really upset. Shouldn't do that. But after about 6 months, he was worse than what I was.
Why did he think well, that
he thought it wasn't gentlemanly. They just come out. I did hard, you know. But they soon changed their mind after a bit. And it used to be a time of a night where we'd go to this same hill and we'd take over. And of a daytime, the Chinese would take over. And when you went up of a night, it's about 6 o'clock. Everywhere would be spotless, there'd be water there for us, there'd be pamphlets, no propaganda. Fountain pens with all, you know, and pamphlets that showed the Yankee women and men living in luxury in swimming pools and all that, and saying, why are you fighting for these people? And all propaganda. Which I brought quite a few home, but misplaced them somewhere. And you'd find stuff hanging on the barbed wire in the morning, but they'd left. Sunglasses or fountain pens, I think, you know, with the Chinese Air Volunteer Army, gift of the Chinese Volunteer Army, and things like that, you know, it's...
Do you think that this propaganda had any effect on them?
Yeah, well, I've never seen any, which was all of a laughing at it, you know.
And which company and platoon did you go into in the Norfolks?
Same, C Company, A platoon. We just stayed, the hill that we left, the dugouts and everything, we left to go to this camp where the transfer was made. When we went back to the line with the Norfolks, we just automatically went back to our own dugouts and everything. And they just accepted about 5 or 6 of us. Ulster Riflemen went back with the Norfolks. It was the same every company, like, somebody went back. And those men that volunteered, K-volunteers, they volunteered to go to Korea from any other regiment now, they had to stay and do the 2 years. They couldn't go home if they wanted to, they had to stay there because they'd volunteered to fight in Korea. And they just had to automatically got transferred into another regiment. But with me being a regular, I had a choice there. But decided to stay, which I'm glad I did. Enjoyed it.
Why was it so enjoyable?
Well, it was, as I said before, it was all spit and polish.
Were the Norfolk's much different from the IUR.
Oh, yeah. Lots of... The men didn't seem as though they'd ever roughed it. They were farmers' lads. You know, they couldn't even light a fire, some of them. They didn't know how to cook. They didn't, you know, the basic things that the Irish lads or our lads, we just used to accept them and just do anything. They seemed to be... But after a bit, they were all right. They got good friends of them, some of them. And they made me an honorary member of their Norfolk Association for life. They sent me a card, life member. So if I ever go up to Norfolk, I can go in there. Like where I went last night to our own career veterans, I could go to theirs and be made welcome. And when we go away this April to Wales, to Prestatyn, and all the career veterans meet there from all over the country, and they come from Holland and everywhere. And Norfolk lads are there then, some of them. But I've never met one, I've known. I've never even met an Irish fusilier or ultra rifleman I've known. And I've gone to Ireland since for a weekend into Bellarmina Barracks, and I've never met no one. I've been to Liverpool with the Irish Knight, with all the Irish guards and everyone meet in the big Adelphi Hotel, and there's been nobody there I've known.
Did you prefer one regiment to the other?
The Irish Fusiliers were the best. Right. I really liked them. I just felt nice with them. That's what they look like.
You were telling me about that you specialised on booby traps and mines. You mean the enemy's booby traps and mines?
Our own and theirs. I used to go out every night and put the wires across the paths, attach a grenade or a mine, or set the mines up ready, because some of the mines had a stick up with spikes out, and you had a wire to it, and if anyone touched it, it used to blow up, and there'd be hundreds of ball bearings there. And I'd send a flare up at the same time, and a little parachute, and that's, you have to clip them together every night before it went dark, and then go out in the morning and under it. And that was my one job I had, and the other one was, if they found a mine, I'd have to go out and have a look, see what it was. And I'd blow it up and bring it back. That's just a job I made myself, kind of thing, I just got interested in.
Was it dangerous, setting the booby traps?
If you didn't know what he was doing. Sometimes you'd take a young lad with you to show him around, and he'd have his rifle at his shoulder, and next minute he'd slip off and fall and just miss it. Well, you shouldn't carry a rifle when you should have either a Sten gun or a revolver. So it doesn't. But they wouldn't know that, like, you want to do. You'd go down and an animal or something. I touched one of these pins and bent it.
An animal?
Well, deer, bears, there's all sorts up there. And you'd have to try and get the pin back in where it bent. Sometimes it was a bit dicey. Well, if you couldn't do it, we'd just blow it off. But little things happened, you know, so somebody would go cutting wood and they'd fall a branch of a tree over where the mines were, and you'd have to try and find out where they were, or drag the tree off. A few little things, you know, scary things happened.
Did you ever have any accidents?
Not accidents, but I was wounded a few times.
We'll come on to that later, yeah. But with the booby traps, were they effective?
They used to give us warning, anyone coming. One of the tricks was a tin, what the cigarettes come in, 50 cigarettes. He'd take the pin out of the grenade, put it in, and put a wire on it. And when the wire was pulled, the grenade would fall out the tin, and that was pretty good one.
Did your booby traps cause any casualties, do you think?
Oh, well, it must have done, yeah. We find blood stains on the path, or now and again we'd find an old, what they'd made a stretcher. The Chinese had put branches on it. We'd find them knocking down sometimes, you know. that he brought them down to take them back, but he must have been able to walk back and left it. Oh, and he'd give us warning, anyone knocking him out. It was pretty good.
So how did you actually set a booby trap? What would you do? What would be the sequence of things that you'd do?
Well, as I just said, now it was an empty tin. No grenades or a lever on it. You'd push that in, take the pin out, and push it in so that the lever's in the tin. And when somebody pulled it out, it'd go off. And 4 seconds, a grenade would go off. And that was one sap. And then you'd have others where you screwed them up, taped them onto a plank of a tree, and just put a wire across onto the pin. And when you pushed the wire, the pin would come out. And
you taped them onto the tree?
Yeah, tied them out, tape, whatever's handy you used, just.
And did you deal with the enemy's booby traps?
It was very, very rare. You'd come across them. The most it was the wooden mines with the waste. It was a square box with a lid. It was a bit. Well, I was mostly on the roads out for jeeps or tanks or.
Were any of your comrades blown up by those?
No, I never knew any, no.
How did you come to be wounded?
I was just in a bit of a tension with a brain gun, and somebody had thought it was a mine or a mortar bomb or grenade, I never found out what it was, just blew up in front of me. And the blast and the brain gun went to bits, flew. I got all of my arms. That one there.
Still got scars on you.
Yeah. And got a middle tube. Got a pension off the army for them. I got malaria. Got yellow jaundice. And cold treatment. Frostbite now. That's on my pension thing.
How did you come to get frostbite?
Just my first winter, very cold, just. Wasn't much, just the tips of your fingers and toes, and one back of one leg seems to be affected.
Did it have any long-term effect?
No, just the local treatment.
What treatment did you get for it?
They just took us back to a field hospital, and they put hot bandages, and then they give us injections and all it was, and just kept us warm, bags of warm drinks.
And weren't you taking anything against the malaria?
No, I got malaria the first time I was in Egypt. And I just collapsed on parade one day and took me to the hospital. And they said, oh, you've got malaria. No, yeah, that was it, malaria. I was in about a fortnight and I wasn't getting better. So this colonel happened to come round one day, the medical officer. And he said, oh, lift his pyjamas up. And I had a ball there. And he says, he's got jaundice as well. That's why he's not getting better. So I was in another fortnight, 3 weeks. And then got a bit better. I just went back to duty. But when I was in Korea, I had a couple of bouts of malaria. And since I've been home, I've had a couple of. I had one about 2 years ago. And my own family doctor didn't believe me at first. About malaria, he said, but after he must have wrote up or read up or something, he come back all apologetic and give me some morphine. What's the name of it now?
How did you drink?
Quinine. Yeah. And when I went to Turkey, he gave me a tablet to take with me in case, where I was all right.
But you'd contracted the malaria in Egypt?
In Egypt, first time, yeah.
Any other illnesses you had in Korea?
No. If flew me out from Korea to Japan to Kobe Hospital. I was there, so how many weeks? 6 months altogether in Japan before I went back to Korea.
This is with the malaria?
No, there's wounds and different things, malaria and everything, you know, just felt rough, just went well.
What did you think of the hospital treatment in...?
Very good. It was the Australians, nurses and doctors in Kobe Military Hospital.
How do you feel now about having served in Korea?
Oh, made up. I've seen life. Been all over the world kind of thing, haven't I? Far East, Middle East, Germany, Ireland. Had a good tour of the world, really.
Was that your main act of service in Korea and Palestine?
Yeah. When I was stationed in Northern Ireland, there was no... We had to be on guard and all that, no, everywhere we went, we had to carry a gun, like, but we never no trouble while we were there.